FM WSCA LP Portsmouth Community Radio.
Love is a burning thing, and it makes a fiery ring. Bound by wild desire, I fell into a ring of fire. I fell into a burning ring of fire. I went down, down, down as the flames went higher, and it burns, 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 the ring of fire, the ring of fire. The taste of love is sweet when hearts like ours meet. I fell for you like a child. Oh, but the fire went wild. I fell into a burning ring of fire. I went down, down, down as the flames went higher, and it burns, 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 the ring of fire, the ring of fire. I fell into a burning ring of fire. I went down, down, down as the flames went higher, and it burns, 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 the ring of fire, the ring of fire. And it burns, 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 the ring of fire, the ring of fire.
You are tuned to 106.1 FM WSCA LP Portsmouth. We are Portsmouth Community Radio. It's now time for the program titled Local Folk here on Portsmouth Community Radio. I'm your host, Steve Carrigan, and I am totally dedicated to the local folk music scene, and especially the people who make it happen. And there are many different ways we arrive at where we are in the traditional music community, or just the community as a whole, but also how we involve ourselves in the groups of local folk. And some of us are musicians, or some of us are listeners, collectors. There are historians involved sometimes, and other keepers of the tradition. So keep on listening and find out what it takes to be local folk here on WSCA. Love this little station. I worked down at Prescott Park during the day as a groundskeeper, not as anybody that has any involvement with any of the entertainment down there, but if you want to get down there and see the flowers and the formal garden and the thing that they call the trial garden and just all the other things, that's what I have involvement in. So that'd be me down there. But as an announcement, I would like to let you know that the Prescott Park Arts Festival, which is kerplunk right in the middle of Prescott Park, puts on their summer. Oh, looks like the Carolina Chocolate Drops are Friday, August 3rd. This Friday are the Carolina Chocolate Drops, and these guys are really cool. I mean, I have to say, I really enjoy them, and yeah, it's not underwriting, so I guess I can sit there and endorse them. But they do one called Cornbread and Butter Beans that I just love, and I've been wanting to play, but I guess they do all kinds of... I guess they've gone way beyond that since then. But, you know, give them a listen down at Friday, Prescott Park. It should be awesome. But let's just get to our guest. This is what I'm talking about. Tonight's guest is not only a noteworthy local musician, he's also a teacher, I believe, and part of an endangered breed of local retail businessmen called the local music store owner. They seem to be getting rare. I think that they're actually being targeted by the Terminator. Indeed, they have been encroached upon not only by box stores like Best Buy, but, of course, the internet, MP3s, and you name it. That's something I can't wait to talk to him about, is just, you know, what's going on here. He's also shared the stage, you know, as a musician. He shared the stage with people like David Francie, Greg Brown, and Bill Staines, among others. And he's put out two solo CDs. So he's really making it happen locally, and I'm here with him right now to find out how. And his name is Steve Brennan. He's sitting right here. So, Steve, welcome to Local Folk.
Hey, it's great to be here, Steve. Great to be still plucking away and part of the somewhat part of the music scene. I don't play out much anymore, but that's not always the way it will be. But I'm always involved in some way or another.
Okay, so you're involved in local music just by the pure fact that you're, you know, part owner of a music store.
Yeah, every day. And we give, like, 300 to 400 lessons a week. And so we are involved with the younger generation an awful lot. And most of those are to younger children. Not all. There's a lot of adults. But we do a lot of guitar because it's still the most popular instrument. And we do, you know, the usual, the piano, the band instruments, and drums. We got a real good drum teacher.
Who's your drum teacher?
Billy Crosby. He's a little nutty, but hey, he's a drummer, so what do you expect? So,
I usually don't expect much from
there
drummers.
There you go. There you are. You know, that's the way it is.
Spoken from a person who plays the Bovron, actually.
Yeah,
so.
He is as he should be. And,
let's go back a little bit in the Wayback Machine for a minute, because I was chatting with you the other day, and you said that you went to your old high school reunion. You said it was right up the street. So did you go to high school in Exeter?
No, I went to the Phillips Exeter Academy.
You went to Phillips Exeter
Talk
Academy.
About a burnout, and I became an old fokey. How did that happen, he said.
That is what I said. I said, I must investigate this further.
Well, it was just after 4 years of PEA, I was just burnt out on education at the age of 17 in 1967. And, of course, that was the summer of love, as we all remember. You don't remember, but I do.
Was it all it was cracked up to be?
Well, I had fun.
Yeah, well, all right. Well, that's good.
That was right at the time that I really started to play a lot of guitar, too, right in there, because everybody was – that's when it really took off.
Did your folks teach you music? Did you learn when you were a kid? Did you grow up in a musical family?
Yeah, my sister was a soprano, was a mezzo soprano who graduated from the Oberlin Conservatory.
Whoa!
She was doing it big time, and then she burnt out on the showbiz aspect. You know, she didn't. She said she felt she felt a little out of place at the parties, and if you know what I mean by that, and. Yeah. And so she went into another aspect of she went into musical therapy, and my mother was a killer pianist. She just was really good, and she's one of those people that could just read anything, the most complicated piece of music first time through, just go di-li-li-li, and I've never been able to match that or do that. You know, that was just she was terrific.
Did you have parties where you stood around? I always ask people this. Did you stand around the piano and sing songs
once in a while? Yeah, we did. We absolutely did. And my father too was played a little bit and played the harmonica. So he was so it was always kind of around. Every member. I had three older sisters, so that was and so they were always kind of, and so that was, and I was like, so consequently I was. I got the big band and the war music from my dad. That was what I grew up. You know, the first thing I remember.
War music?
Glenn Miller, World War II.
Oh, okay.
Glenn Miller. Okay. I always call it war music because it was World War II. And,
did you like that stuff?
Oh, yeah. The first music I ever remember hearing was Moonlight Serenade by Glenn Miller, which is just a beautiful piece of music. And then, you know, Harry Belafonte, and then American Bandstand from my sisters, from my older sisters, and all of the early rock and roll. So, you know, I mean, even, you know, Bill Haley, Julius LaRosa. I mean, I remember all that stuff from when I was like 4 or 5 years old. The pre-Elvis rock, you know.
Pre-Elvis rock, yeah, because Elvis did change everything.
Yeah,
the Beatles came along too, and that kind of changed things.
Boom, boom,
too.
And that was it. Yeah.
Boom, boom, bang. Here we are. Next thing you know, we have the Black Eyed Peas.
Yeah.
Or I don't know, or whatever.
Yeah. We could talk about that.
Well, yeah. I mean, we're here to talk about music. I mean, you know, we just listened to a song. We started off by listening to Ring of Fire, which was off of... is this your second CD?
The second one that I finally made. I made the first one in 89 and the second one 20 years later with all kinds of other jobs in between and the like. So
what... now, after all that time, what is it about, for example, Ring of Fire that... I mean, you know, there's only 11 songs on a CD, you know, or maybe there's between, what, 10 and 20 or so
there
somewhere?
Might be, yeah,
maybe,
yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of songs out there.
Yeah, to do. Why Ring of Fire?
Yeah, why?
I don't know. I've always kind of been in love with that song, and I've done it, and I always did it. You know, I was a Johnny Cash fan when it wasn't cool to be a Johnny Cash fan. You know, because I've always thought he was just singularly fabulous, But I do it very differently. I do it. It's obviously a very Steve Brennan. You know, there's no trumpets happening there. You know, there's no mariachi trumpets. It's just me finger picking and Bob Beal playing the bass. The Screen, his group, and he has a beautiful recording studio in Newton, New Hampshire.
New Hampshire. Yeah. What's the name of the studio?
BB3 Studio. Yeah.
BB3 Studio.
Yeah, yeah. He does really good work. He's a really smart guy and a really good musician. And he has all kinds of good ideas that I may not have. All of a sudden, when you need a guy like that, another brain when you're making a CD.
Did he produce the CD?
I would say basically he did all of the, you know, he did perform most of the functions of a producer. Yeah. Not officially. I mean, it was just him and me in the studio and whoever I invited in.
That's what happens.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I've noticed can happen at studios is that you wind up. You know, someone who, well, I mean, I've been to a studio where the person was like, well, you know, I'm really just an engineer. So if you want production, then that's going to, you know, be different. You know, if you want those brilliant ideas in my head, then I'm just going to have to charge you for them. But then almost every other studio I've been to around here has said, you know, they've kind of gotten involved in how they kind of, you know, imagine, you know, the sound could be, or they throw an idea out there, or they say something like, oh, that wasn't quite in pitch even.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and that's important to have somebody to do that for you. I must say I only used the pitch corrector once that I remember on this, and I used it a couple of times on some people that I had come in, but not often. But sometimes, I'll tell you about a pitch corrector. What's good about a pitch corrector is this. You can have a beautiful take, a take that in every way is perfect except for one really clammy, flat, or sharp note. And you go, oh, and I, you know, I was like, on my first CD, it was like, no, there was no such thing. And I was too proud to probably do it at that point anyway.
Right.
But this time it was like, you know, the clock is ticking, the dollars are mounting up, and I'm going, man, I don't know if I can play the rest of that song as well, ever again, as well as I just did, except for that one clam. So with the power of that little mouse, you can just go and fix that, and I did. And so I kind of Britney Spears'd it, you know, and I said, and I admit it. And I won't tell anybody where I did it. So you have to figure it out for you.
That's good enough. I mean, sometimes it's necessary to use these because you're absolutely right. You do what otherwise would have been like an absolutely awesome take, except for one little thing. I had Cecil Abels in last week, and we were talking a little bit about the recording process as well. So I love talking about the recording process and how that all goes. And he was saying, you know, it sounded very natural. And so he said, well, you know, obviously they did it all in different takes, and they did it, if you stick one microphone there like you would at a show, it's, you know, it's not going to be like you think.
No, not at all. No, so exactly. And what with, now, and here's the other thing, too. What Bob Beale's way of doing it, and it's a very good way. So just sing it. Now, you get your all your instrumentation down and together. And really, that's not so hard. I mean, I can do that. You know me. I can do that. It's
yeah.
Like I can pretty much do it pretty perfect, you know.
Yeah.
And I can get up and maybe do it again perfect. But singing, you can really... there's better, there's good, better, worse, and terrific. And what he'll do is he'll have you sit down and sing it five times with the cans on, as they say, and that's a good way to do it. And he can now they can just kind of ease you in out of one, and you're exactly in the same place, and you're kind of in this little booth, in this little isolation kind of booth. And you're right there so that you don't move relative to the microphone at all, and everything stays just about exactly the same. So he can just move in and out of one. Okay, we're going to take that, and you listen to it, you know, 5 minutes, 5 seconds at a time, and say, okay, do we like this one? No, let's listen to the other one. Let's go, how's that? Okay, well, no, that one's not good. Oh, that one was good. Yeah, let's keep that one. Okay, boom. And so you wind up with an amalgamation. Now, usually there's one good, really good take that winds up being about two-thirds of the song. But the rest of it, whoops, excuse me, I just hit the microphone. Sorry.
take two.
I'm a big guy, and this is a little studio. I'm bumping into stuff here. And so it's like that's the way, that's the reality of it. You know, and I admit it, you know, there was, you know, and it works better that way.
Were you ever sitting there in one of these isolation booths?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, for anyone that's never been into one of these things, it's like almost an eerily quiet place with this instrument sticking out, you know, the microphone sticking off the wall, and sitting there listening to these things over and over again and singing one line at a time, thinking to yourself, how did I get here?
Yeah. How did this happen from, like, yeah, when I used to be slapping on the guitar in the back porch? I don't know. But yeah. But I don't know. It's just, you know, if you want it to, it's got to be kind of perfect. And so you got to have like some technology with you.
You know, you're putting it down. It's not like a gig where people are waiting for it to be good and then they hear goodness because they want to hear entertaining goodness, and they're able to give up, you know, a little bit here and there
in
their own minds.
Yeah.
They're able to give up the perfection just a little bit.
Yeah. And they hear it more forgivingly live.
That's what I mean. They hear it and they hear it more forgivingly live.
Sure, absolutely.
As a live music, if you were to sit there and record everything that you did,
you know, and forget the lyrics and start laughing and do that kind of stuff. No, not good. No. Yeah.
Oh. Well, we're not going to do. Well, I want to do a live one later on, but I want to play something else off the CD if you care to listen to. I know that you say that people know that I know this road, which is something that I listened to just earlier today. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. Maybe we'll leave with that song because it, you know, the road.
Yeah.
What else you got on here? I've got.
How about Getting Out of Town? That's a rock and roll song.
Getting Out of Town.
That's the most produced tune, and it's one that I wrote, and it's one that I wrote about an era of my life, about leaving New Jersey.
About leaving New Jersey?
I'm sort of like really needing to leave New Jersey.
Well, that's how most people feel.
Yeah, right. And I sort of like, you know, I had blazed a path of destruction it was when I was like 22, 23 years old. And generally that used to be the way it was. I'd go somewhere and live for a little while, and then I'd have to, then it would be like, oh, I think it's time to leave. And so...
So did you like to go burn your bridges or something?
In New Jersey, I kind of did. Yeah, I kind of needed, it was like, it was a good idea for me to leave.
It was a good idea for you to leave? All right.
Yeah, on many fronts, so.
Well, that's awesome. Well, this is Getting Out of Town by Steve Brennan here on Local Folk.
Them big old storm clouds are forming on the horizon, and the broken pieces of my life are polarizing. I know I probably ought to stay and face the music, but I kinda like the cowardly solution. I ain't gonna hang around. I'm getting out of town. Oh, I got the problems just like a pack of dogs been snapping at my heels. And I don't even need to tell you how
very bad it feels when you get yourself stuck in a bucket of poo. Hey, there's only one thing you can do, and like a turkey through the car, I'm getting out of town. Fire up the old songbird, my karma's closing in. Just get me out of this one, Lord, I'll never do nothing wrong again. Now, there was something about a woman, something about her lover, something about her mother, her brother, something or other, you know, to the best of my recollection, I just can't recall. But now my machine is taking all my calls. One of these days, I'm gonna do things right. I'm gonna do my business in the broad daylight. But till that old sun come around, I'm getting out of town. Oh, way out of town. Just about one too many females and $1,000 behind, yeah. Got to grab my guitar, grab my old suitcase. You can keep my lucky charms for all the good they do me. Where the hell are my keys? I can hear the hounds coming. Rev up my knees and hit the ground running. The good book says that you read what you sow. Well, let me tell you, people, when these seeds start to grow, I don't want to be around. I'm getting out of town. Well, I can kill them hound when I put my ear to the ground. They make such a nasty sound. I'm getting out of town.
Whoa. Hey, that totally rocked out. I mean, obviously you had to get out of there.
Yeah.
Obviously you had to get out. No time for yard sale.
No time. No time. No, that's for other people. No.
That's for other people, not me. When it's time to go, it's time mm-hmm. to go.
Yeah.
So this is, you wrote it about a time when you were mm-hmm. in your 20s?
Yeah. I'd gotten out of, I'd left school. Somebody's put a, and I was just tired of being in school. I had 4 years of Exeter, 4 years of college, didn't graduate at that point. I didn't flunk out. I just didn't graduate. And somebody, I wanted to get out and start working and make some money. And somebody put a hammer in my hand and said, we're going down to New Jersey and make and build garden apartments and condos. And I said, I'm with you, man. And we went down there for, you know, for a year. And there was some, I made a lot of money. And of course, with when you have a lot of money and you're young and stupid like that, you
yeah,
you can
right.
you can
really
leave,
mess things up.
Yes, absolutely. So, and you know, so it kind of like after about a year, it was like, geez, it's time to go. So
were you you're swinging a hammer, right? Mm-hmm. But are you playing the guitar as well?
I did actually play. I played at Rutgers a couple of times while I was down there, but I wasn't focused on that at the time. Although at UMass where I went to college, I played a lot of guitar.
Which UMass were you at?
Amherst.
You were okay. So you were up at UMass Amherst, mm-hmm. and so you had these. Were you a good guitarist then?
Well, I was good. I was good for then. At that time, I practiced constantly. That was in my James Taylor era of like sitting and just, you know, I had my little General Electric record player. You know, the kind with a little platform that would fold out, and you'd have the two folding out speakers, and you just sit there and you'd. I hit the mic again. That's okay.
I don't know. And, hit it all you want.
It's like. And that's the way it would happen. I just sit there all night and try to copy his guitar style. And so, and between that and, you know, Dave Van Ronk and, you know, Bert Jansch or whatever. You know, I learned how
Dave
to play.
Dave Van who?
Dave Van Ronk.
I don't know who that is.
Oh, he was a Greenwich Village blues guitar guy.
What was the other guy's name?
Which Bert Jansch?
Bert Jansch.
He was an Englishman, and he's around.
Is he? I should look this
Google
stuff
him.
Up.
Yeah, YouTube him. That stuff is on YouTube. Oh, yeah, they're both legends.
That's why I have this show, you know, because then people can be like, Bert Jansch, and I can be like, well, all right, I'm going to have to look that up because I don't have time on my own.
Bert Jansch and John Renborn were Pentangle. Now, Pentangle you probably know from a little bit.
Pentangle I've heard of.
Yeah, okay. Yeah,
I've at least heard of them, so heard of that. So, but okay, but these were your influences back then. So that rock song that we just listened to was, but you were more... Mm-hmm. James Taylor, singer song. That's what was going on then. This is the thing that I'm getting, coffee houses, James Taylor, and stuff like that. And so that's what you're doing to pick up the chicks. Is that, you know?
Well,
or whatever.
Yeah. Now that you bring that up, that was a kind of, you know, that was in the back of my mind.
You can't do that. For some reason, it doesn't work as well with a piano.
No. The piano kind of focuses your attention. It's too much of a distraction.
Yeah, if you're playing the piano, you have to be looking like towards the piano. If you've got a guitar, you can like face out and be
audience,
like, this one's for you.
That's why piano players are so good at background music, because you're not really playing to anybody.
Ah.
Whereas a guitar isn't so good background because you're playing to people, and it's like, so it doesn't work so well unless you're instrumental guitar. But
I see.
If you're singing at people, it's hard for them to ignore you, you know?
I really like that perspective. I never thought about it. Yeah. I wonder where'd you come up with that? Is it from being around instruments all the time?
And figuring out why, you know, the piano guys got all the noodling gigs, the background gigs, whenever I would try to do it, it was like, this isn't working. Why? Why? Because I'm playing at them, and it sort of demands, you know, the whole act of singing and playing towards someone and playing a song.
And singing.
It engages somebody's mind and their soul and their, you know, and their whole awareness in a way that, in that situation, if you're background music, you don't want to engage somebody's awareness. You want them to be about 1/5, 1 or 5% of their brain aware of the music, and 95, you know. Yeah, that's not so.
That's so true.
Yeah.
My great friend Kevin Scanlon would play these.
I know.
You know Kevin Scanlon.
I know Kevin, yeah.
Well, he'd play solo gigs at places like restaurants, and he would have a banjo.
Yeah, it's hard to ignore a banjo.
And he would have the songs that he sang, and he would have his guitar, and I'd go in and see him and be like, man, how can you do this? I would almost rather, I'm sitting there thinking to myself, I would almost rather not be a musician if I was playing the piano. I mean, what I'm saying is, you know, he'd walk away with a check, but, you know, he'd sing songs that weren't being heard and play these instruments where he was looking out at people, and if they engaged him, then maybe that wasn't even the point, you know?
Yeah.
And that made it kind of hard.
I hear you. Yeah. And there it is. So it's like, you know, that sort of goes to, you know, I'll tell you, that goes to why I'm kind of reluctant at this stage of my game. I'm 62, going pretty close to being 63 here. Yikes! And I'm thinking to myself, I'd like to retire. I'm tired. I've been working in that store for a long time, and you know, and I want to kind of, you know, bag it, and I want to get out there and play one more time. And I'm thinking, but do I want to go into the barroom scene and try to gain the attention of people who don't really want to have their attention got? It's not a coffee house. It's not a concert. I was in a concert coffee house kind of mode before, and that's sort of where I would like to be again. But I don't know. That took a lot of building. Getting those kind of gigs takes a lot of phone calls and a lot of stick-to-itiveness. And
let's talk about those levels for a minute, because I recently got myself a gig at this place called Fela up in Wells. It's an Irish place, and we're singing good old Irish, you know the songs, we know the songs, everybody knows the songs, right? And they're singing along, and we're singing them, and whatever, you know, and it ain't perfect, I'll tell you that, but it's raucous, and people are paying attention, actually. I mean, they're being like, they're ready, whack for the daddy-o, and, you know.
Well, that kind of music is there. They're there to get pulled in.
They're there to get pulled in, and we don't mind doing it because we can really enjoy that, you know?
Sure.
Now, if it was a coffee house or a concert,
No.
Totally different. No. You know, yeah. Because what is your take on the difference between a barroom gig, let's say, or which is a performance, and like a concert gig? I mean, they're just kind of different things.
You're a different animal. You're it's a different function. I remember I used to play at the 99 restaurants way back when back in the 70s, and it was a good gig and it paid real well. It was six nights a week. It was a coveted gig. And yet people would say, it was like that old Billy Joel line, "Man, what are you doing here?"
Right.
From the Piano Man.
Yep.
It's like the people, because I was always a cut above. I mean, I wasn't banging away on, you know, Neil Diamond songs. I was playing and singing as best I could and really working it, you know, because that's all I knew to do. And people would tell me, you know, "You're too good for this place." And I'd go, "What does that mean?" And then I figured out that they're not wanting to listen. You're miscast as a serious, you know, writer or folk musician, and or if you're not doing top 40 and or not doing all top 40 at least, if in that setting, whereas you can take that and move it to the UU church, and you know, and it's like it's what people want, and you might have an audience of 40, 50, 60, and you know. And which is like to me almost like the perfect size audience, you know, because it's an intimate kind of thing. That's the best situation for what I do. You take it, you know, you got to learn, you know, tie a yellow ribbon. I had to learn tie a yellow ribbon once I still remember it. I was traumatized by that, and I did it. And, you know, which is what I just, you know, and I learned it for a gig. It was a condition of getting a bar gig.
Wow.
In that era when that song was a hit.
Yeah.
You know, and that was a condition. The guy said, "Yeah, but you got to learn that song because everyone wanted to hear that."
Wow.
He said, "Do you know that song?" I said, "No." "Well, if you're going to play here, you got to learn it." So I did.
I'll tell you what, I mean, someday I'm probably going to have to learn Danny Boy.
Yeah.
That's why I got Bruce, though.
Yeah. Well, you know, Danny Boy is an interesting thing. You start singing Danny Boy, and I love that song, and I think it's one of the, the way that the people kind of goof on it, because it gets goofed on, and everyone starts singing along,
yeah,
and they start doing it their way. It's a magnificent story. It's a beautiful melody. It's a beautiful song, and I have done it, you know, a few times. I've sung it at friends' fathers' funerals and things like that, and it's like, so it's like heavy duty, and it means a lot to the really heavily Irish, which is kind of where I am and like my wife is and her people, and so it is just, you got to just take the song real serious. And that's the way. If you're going to do that song, just don't do it like anybody else. Do it like Steve Carrigan does it, and think of the father in the song and what he's going through at that moment. And it's because it's theater, that song. It really is, and that's why, yeah, here I am on my high horse. But that's the way I look at it. And if you do it that way, all of a sudden you bring your own life to it, and all of a sudden it's not a silly goof song anymore. It's like, hey. It is what it is, yeah.
And you're right. I mean, you're totally, totally right about that. Yeah. And in fact, you know, I learn over and over again that no matter what the song, if you can make it your own,
then you can
make something.
Sure. There's an art. That's the art of it, right there. I mean, even if you don't write it, you kind of rewriting it a little bit every time you sing it, because if you inhabit that song, you got to own it and inhabit it. Yeah.
And that one's a heavy duty one. And you know, so the other reason that I would say, oh, you know, I'm going to have to learn it someday, but really to get into that mode is a lot more difficult for me than it is for me to get into the mode of like Whiskey in a Jar. Because I can get into
fun.
The mode of Whiskey in a Jar.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
That's no problem. I'm in the court mound. I'm a fighter. And, you know, the woman deceived me. And, you know, I know.
You
I can own that or whatever. I mean, because it's so totally different than my life, you know. But yeah, I can I can imagine that I can get into that. So
well, there's a 19-year-old Irishman in all of us, Kerrigan.
I think so. Yeah, yeah, really, Brennan. Oh,
yeah, there we go. Yeah.
But when you do, you teach personally, people?
I have a couple of students part time, and I have in the past. But in the store, I don't. I do them. I do it in my house or like one of the guys I barter an exercise guy. I have a guy for my back. We were talking about back troubles earlier.
Yep.
And off mic, but. I have a guy that I go to a trainer, and we swap, you know, one session for, you know, we just this morning I did that. His name's, can I use his name? Is it?
Yeah, why not?
Ted Heffernan. He's over in Stratham. And I just gave him a lesson this morning, and we did a couple of Beatles tunes.
Cool.
Because he's, you know, and, you know, I know something he doesn't know, and he knows something I don't know, and we, you know.
So do you all kinds of different music, not just, I mean, obviously your influences have been vast, and
I've been around a long time.
Yeah. 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 It's yeah. You know, well, let's listen. I want to listen to another track off of this CD.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering which one, you know. I want to say I know this road for last, but and I've done Ring of Fire, and I've played I'm Out of Here.
Let me just have a look and see. I got to remember
Getting Out of Town.
I got to remember what's on this.
That's okay.
Thing.
Do you yeah.
He'll have to go. Ooh, Latest Flame.
Latest Flame.
Elvis. That's an old, that's a not huge, a big hit for Elvis, but not a huge, overwhelming hit.
Awesome.
I love
Let's
this.
Let's listen to it. His latest Flame.
It's an Elvis
eight.
Tune, and I just.
All right. And yeah, we're going to listen to this. This is an Elvis tune, and it was, it says Doc Pomus.
Doc Pomus.
Mark Shulman.
Yeah.
Who are those people? Are they the people
They were
that...
writers. They wrote it, and they were huge songwriters from the 50s.
Before
and
I play
wrote
this...
a number of Elvis songs, yeah.
Oh, okay, yeah, because I know he didn't write his own stuff.
Some
but...
he did. He wrote a few.
But you want to talk about some of the people that were on the CD? So before I play the song, did you want to...
Oh, yeah. I want to say that my partner Rich Bowles played lead guitar on Getting Out of Town. It was real good. I like. You know, I just want to say he did a really good job. And... well, basically, and on this one, this coming up song, Dan Miner, who's a Seacoast guitar legend, sort of like under the radar kind of guitar player, who is just a fantastic guitar player.
Under the Radar is coming up next.
Is that really honestly?
The program.
I just happened to say that at that moment. Hey, maybe I just picked up on it. I don't see. I'm
maybe
psychic.
I don't know. I'm it's psychic. Award winning.
So he is. He lives over in Durham, and he's been a friend of mine for a long time. And he's just did a terrific job on that. And I think he might also played bass on this one too. That's the beauty of recording, is you can get people to play bass and lead at the same time.
Yeah, you have a multi-instrumentalist talent, and you can make it happen.
Yeah.
Great, and we're going to listen to it right now.
And, his wife Nancy also sang. She was in the Ooze.
Ah, the Ooze.
She did the Ooze.
Ah, yeah. The Ooze for this one right here? Or
there
the
was some Ooze on Latest Flame.
All right.
They're really good Ooze.
Keep
too.
Your ears open for the Ooze. Yeah. Here on Local Folk, and we'll be right back.
Very old friend came by today, and he was telling everyone in town of a love that he had found. And Marie's the name of his latest flame. He talked and talked, and I heard him say that she had the longest, blackest hair, the prettiest green eyes anywhere. And Marie's the name of his latest flame. And though I smiled, the tears inside were a-burning. I wished him luck, and then he said goodbye. He was gone, but still his words kept returning. What else was there for me to do but cry? Would you believe that yesterday this girl was in my arms and swore to me she'd be mine eternally? And Marie's the name of his latest flame. Today, and he was telling everyone in town of a love that he had found, and Marie's the name of his latest flame. Marie's the name of his latest flame. Marie's the name of his latest flame.
You are tuned to 106.1 FM WSCA LP Portsmouth. We are Portsmouth Community Radio. And programming on Portsmouth Community Radio is made possible by you, our members, and by the Seacoast Growers Association, presenting farmers markets in the Seacoast region for 32 years with local produce, meats, prepared foods, garden plants, and handcrafted goods. SeacoastGrowers.org. This is Steve Carrigan, and you're listening to Local Folk, and I'm here with Steve Brennan, co-owner of Exeter Music. We've been chatting, and the time's been flying by. Oh, this is also a time, though, to talk about musical calendar. Mm-hmm. You know anything musical going on?
Do I know anything musical? Well, yeah, I know. I sing in a quartet.
Oh, really?
Called the Sugar Beets, which I think someone else has that name, too, out in, like, Colorado. But we won't even... They're out there, so... Anyway.
The Sugar Beets.
And okay. It's a quartet, and it's just... It's a pretty much a cappella. Sometimes, you know, I play a little guitar. Someone might play a little piano sometimes. And we are going to be in concert in Candia on August 8th.
Cool.
At... let's see. What time is it? I think it's 6 o'clock.
Cool. Acapella.
Acapella.
Mostly,
it
at least.
Really is. So that's something else that I...
kind of an acapella?
I didn't even bring this up.
Oh.
It's like, oh, well, we could have gone down this road, but let's do it now. Jen Ramsey, Doug Ramsey, and Sue Noseworthy. They're Stratum residents for the most part. Well, Sue, I think, lives in Newmarket. But Jennifer and Sue are music teachers and also choir directors. I'm into choral music pretty big time.
Really?
Also. Yeah, because I love to sing. As I get older, I like to sing more than, you know, play the guitar. It's more of my soul.
Well,
you know?
I get it. All I do is sing.
You went that way. Yeah.
There's nothing like it.
Oh yeah. Yeah, because it's you can really explore it. If you only do that, you can explore it in ways that if you're sitting there thinking about playing a guitar all the time, it's like that maybe you can't. You know, it becomes separate and it's just you. All of a sudden, your fingers and hands aren't doing anything. It's just you and your voice and the song and the lyric and how am I going to do this? Yeah,
you got to learn how to do it.
There's so many decisions to make.
It's funny though because I can take those voice things and try to learn them more and more, but I have a hard time sitting down with a guitar. And some people can obsessively work on the guitar like that. I have a hard time doing it. I can't do any finger picking at all. I just have to strum on the guitar. But anyways, so what do you do? What are you doing? How many? Four people?
It's four people.
So is it like a quartet? I mean, obviously,
it's a quartet,
you know.
And we sing, you know, Embraceable You, and then we also do like. Stuff I've always, you know, we're sort of like going through the bucket list of all that we all have of songs we've always wanted to do.
Oh, really?
And you know, and you know, like we're doing, I get to sing bump 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 dang a ding ding a ding a dung ding blue moon. You know that? Yep. It's like there you go, man. It's like it's just and it's something like okay, now I get to do that, and it's like hello, it's like fun, and I because man, you can't do that at the UU at the coffee house, man. They don't let you do songs like well, you can. But,
you can once you're on stage, you can do whatever you want.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But you. But if that's what you do, they ain't going to give you the job.
No. You can do whatever you want once.
Once, yeah, exactly, exactly.
Now you have to put the appropriate repertoire with the appropriate thing. But hey, if you're in Candia and you, it's August 8th, you said?
August 8th, yeah.
And it's the Sugar Beets.
Yeah, and it's that they have like a gazebo, like a town area, a town center area, and we're in the, at the gazebo.
So did you know them from Exeter Music?
Kind of, yeah. I know I've known them indirectly from there, but also from Vocalocity, which is a choir, a local choral, a community chorus that is in Stratum, and that Jen is the leader of. She also is the leader of the Congregational Church in Hampton. Sunday. So she's a very busy lady, and she teaches music at the central at the cooperative middle school, and you know, so I like to I hang with school teachers a lot, music teachers, because they come in the store and buy music a lot, you know, and that sort of thing. So they sort of start out as my customers, and then we get to talking, and boom.
Well, tell me about how you got into the music, you know, business of the Exeter Music Store. I mean, mm-hmm. did you said I want a music store.
Well, it wasn't a dream come true, really. It was Bob Moore ran it. You know, I don't know if you know Bob Moore is a great guy, and he is a terrific guitar player, terrific singer songwriter, and he runs a coffee house in Exeter proper, and the First Friday Coffee House.
First Friday Coffee House. Hey, there you go, musical calendar.
Yep, there you go.
All right,
and it's coming up very soon, and it's every First Friday religiously, and. And he just he kind of was in there for 12-13 years, something like that. He owned that store and ran it, and I was like kind of like wondering what I'm gonna do next. I could, you know, I was thinking of going into like a, you know, I just needed a sit down job that I could do into my old age, you know, that I wasn't gonna have to be a young man to do, because I'd always had young men jobs, and I just he was looking to sell the store, and I didn't really want to be a bean counter.
Yeah,
and I didn't want to keep driving a truck because it was just a tough, abusive kind of lifestyle that I didn't want to keep doing. I was also a truck driver for a while. I know this road is a truck driver song.
Well, that was gonna Well, now I know how you wrote a truck driver song.
There it is. Yeah. That's I got that song out of driving a truck, out of you know driving over the road for not very long period of time. It was over the road trucking.
It's funny what you can come up with when you're on the road.
Oh,
so,
boy.
Yeah. So having a music store. Do you ever listen to that? There's a Tom Waits song where he says, "Ha, I'll buy a used car lot so I can drive a different car every day." You know.
Well, yeah, that's it. Well,
you know what I'm saying?
That's where I got this guitar. But anyway, it's like you come across some nice guitars that much. They do cross your path. But I just sort of said, well, this is something that I want to do. And I wanted to be in business for myself. And I wanted to be small. And I wanted to be something I knew about and was good at. And, you know, and that I was in my comfort zone. And I just felt like I just seemed like it couldn't. I mean, it might not be a huge success, but it couldn't go too far wrong. And you know, and I don't have huge needs, so I don't need to make a zillion bucks. You know,
right?
You know, just give me a decent roof and a decent set of wheels and a Waylon song and a good guitar, as they say, and that's about it. I don't need another thing, except a, you know, my a good, you know, a good wife, a
yes,
fine wife,
a fine
and
wife.
That you need. You got to have that, and I got that. So, and that's what sort of. And I said, okay, this looks good. And so, and we've been there 13 years, and I was with Rich. Rich was another Rich Bowles, the fellow who played guitar on Getting Out of Town. He's my partner, and he is a really good. He fixes everything, and he's one of these really talented fixer guys, which comes in real handy. And he's That's a big part of what we do. And
so this is what I was going to ask. I mean, you know, you've got your MP3s and you have your internet and you have everything else, and yet, and so, I mean, daddy's out of business. You know, I mean, that was like the place around. And so, I mean, then you go into Best Buy, because I live in Portsmouth, you know. That place is... You don't want to patronize. I mean, maybe there's nothing fundamentally wrong with it, I guess. But I mean, I prefer not to. Sorry, Best Buy. Actually, no, I'm not sorry. You know, you guys, your warranties stink.
It's difficult.
You don't treat your employees right. I've read about it.
It's hard. It's maybe like well, maybe you will. Who knows? But anyways, it's like
My opinions, they're not those of WSEI. I should have read that before.
There you go.
Or it's under writers or trustees.
You're covered. But yeah, and I go in there, and you know, sometimes I go. It's well, I don't want to say anything bad about Best Buy.
No. I'll say you're ahead. Not even prompting. You know, no. Nah. Okay, but I will say that there's. But
we know from guitars.
But tell me something though. Yeah. How does somebody? I mean, I get the Sweetwater catalog. Okay, the catalog with all the stuff. And okay, how can you pick up that catalog, open it up, and see a $3,000 guitar? $3,500, $4,000 guitar. It's, oh yeah, I'm going to buy that, and then call them up and buy it. I mean,
That doesn't make much sense to me, and I would never do that. Clearly, people do it, and sometimes you get lucky,
but you never know what you're going to get. I mean, you sort of know.
Yeah, and you might get lucky, but you might not. And we get them. We get them in sometimes. You know, I just got this off the internet. Or, you know, and it's the kid comes in and it's like the thing is messed up. It's not set up. The neck is bent. This, that, or the other thing. It's like those midnight guitars. What's that guy? He looks like Zorro. What's his? He comes in.
I don't know.
Esteban. he sells a lot of guitars that we wind up seeing that turn into a pumpkin at midnight, you know. and it's just like, oh my goodness. And that's what happens. Sight unseen guitars, you know.
Well, it's just like, because, I mean, you know, even a good reputable guitar company can have something that's off. Or what about just wanting to pick out the wood? Or, you know, I used to own an HD28, a Martin, right? You know.
I remember, yeah.
You remember, right? Yeah. You used to own an HD28.
I used to own that HD28.
but before I got it, I must have played three HD28s, and that was the one that I chose. Because, and, you know, if you just order it, they just grab it. Just grab the next one in line. I mean, that makes it sound kind of tough for me. But you sell a bunch of guitars in your place. But you sell mostly to
younger
students,
people.
And you get people going. You get people rolling in the music. Right?
Their first and second guitars. We don't sell really high end guitars. We sell the best affordable guitars we can find, and we have picked through the various brands, and we've got the best $100 guitar that we've ever been able to find, the best $200 guitar, up to about, you know, we try to keep it under like $600 or $700.
Is it the Blue Ridge? Is that what it's called?
Blue Ridges are very, very good. I own one.
You have one. Bruce McIntyre has one. He plays it all the time.
Yeah, it's a good. They are good guitars, and they don't cost. They're not cheap, but they don't cost an arm and a leg. Yes, they're made in China. I don't have, as it stands right now, I don't have a huge problem with that. I can't. The forces that dictate that are much larger than I can deal with.
I don't personally have it.
And yes, it's wonderful to. But if you're going to buy an American guitar, you're going to have to pay a lot. That is that quality. You're going to be ready to pay more, and it will maybe be a better guitar.
Well, you know, you're going to get rolling somehow. You're going to get rolling with the thing that you're doing. Yeah. You can't have a $3,000 or $4,000 hurdle.
No.
Or else you're never going to get in there.
No, exactly.
And, you know, you don't want to buy junk, so you got to go someplace where they've played them and they know that they're, you know, it's not, you know, I actually did go into Best Buy the other day, and I said, so why is this 1-foot cord $15 and this 10-foot cord is $12. The CEO does those guys upstairs. They don't even really always know what they're talking about all the time. And I said, "All right, well, see you later." Right? I was like, "Okay, so it's the CEOs don't even play music, probably making these decisions." You know,
you come to Exeter Music, and we'll give you a better line than that. At least.
Better line than that, and a better guitar too. Yeah, you know, I will say that. Well, you've been in the music business for a long time. We actually have to roll, but I want to play.
Short.
I know it's way too short. 1 hour, and that's all we get. It
flew by. Yeah,
it flies. It flies by here on Local Folk, and you know, well, because we're having a good time. I'm going to play. I know this road, and we've been kind of alluding to it, but it's what I happened to have listened to earlier today, and it's a great song that you wrote. Mm-hmm.
I wrote this one, yeah. Roger Williams is on Dobro. I want to get that set on this, and he does a fantastic job.
Okay.
He's a great, great player.
Roger Williams on Dobro. All right. Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to have to leave you. We're going to have to leave you, folks. Steve and Steve signing out here on Local Folk.
I had a ball.
Yeah, me too. And we will see you folks next week. Coming up next, Under the Radar.
This road, I know it well. The midnight sirens, the streetlight sights, the sounds, the smells. And this bridge, it will get slippery when it gets cold. Yes, I know this road. I know this road from long ago. Now there's a baseball field just over there behind St. Joe's. Playing Pony League, 14 years old. Yeah, I know this road. The crack of the ball on my Louisville bat. I'd trade you this truck for a feeling like that. I stood at the plate, the ball disappeared. My father jumped up and the people all cheered. Oh, I know this road. I know this road. I think she still lives nearby. We'd park right there and swear our love would never die. We made our vows at old St. Joe's. Ah, but I don't know. You do the best you can. Sometimes these things just don't work out the way you plan. Too many days, too far away. Now I can't go home. But I can pull 20 ton at the drop of a hat. You can sure fall in love with a feeling like that. I know this machine, I know what it can do. 1,200 miles without stopping for fuel. And I know this road, it never ends. It'll take a million miles to bring me back again. And if I hustle, I'll make Waterville by 6 a.m. 'Cause I know this road. Yeah, I know this road.